The starting code today is U21. I'm getting tricky and putting letters in them. So our start code is U21. And so with that, I will throw it over to Chris, who is so kind to do some topics for us today. And she's got a beautiful new picture up that she just got up. And we have to congratulate Chris for also getting a new website up. So congratulations on that, too.
Thank you.
And did I have another person join?
Hey, it's Katie.
Oh, you're here with us. Yay.
Well, I'm only going to be here for 30 minutes. But.
We will take it. We love having you. So,
yay.
Okay, so throwing it over to Chris.
Well, I'm sorry that I wasn't at your previous meeting on LinkedIn. However, LinkedIn branding and resumes all kind of go in together. So perhaps this is the best time for me to give a short presentation on what I have discovered. And whether it's for LinkedIn, branding, or resumes, I always ask clients three things. And I've asked myself this as well. And that is, first, who is the audience you want to reach? I had a client whose LinkedIn profile had a slew of security credentials behind her name. And yet in her headline, she listed herself as a cybersecurity professional and realtor. And so the message was confused. Which was her audience? You know, she really wanted to impact the security profession, but being a realtor was a more of a hobby or second profession. So making sure you have the right audience up there was extremely important. The second thing that I ask them is, what value do you bring to the table? And this is a toughie because they kind of, sort of know their value. They go around and around and around on what that is, but they have a hard time articulating their value succinctly. Now, I had another client who is a scientist and an inventor, and he knew he wanted to work with small businesses, so he got the audience part right, but when he described his value, it was complicated scientific jargon that he used. So through coaching, we synthesized what his value to recognizable terms by these small companies who really were totally unscientific. They weren't engineering firms. They were people who were providing services or products. So he really needed to keep that value easily understandable. He had developed a collaborative process that would enable people to create their future rather than react to it. So the third question which I asked him was, so what? You know, you can have the best doggone service in the world, but if people think that's nice but they don't really want it, it doesn't do you any good. So what he and I came up with was his process positioned these companies to enter new markets and be able to adapt to changing business models and reduce costs. So knowing his audience, knowing the value he brought and why it was important really got him on the map. And he was able to become a consultant to a number of companies, and in fact, because he's a scientist and an inventor, was able to come together with an angel who gave him capital to create his toy that he engineering toy called Brackets. So he became very successful on that. I find that when I'm working on my profile, as you see up on the screen right now, I'm constantly evolving it, constantly reinventing myself. At least once a year I go in and start doing this. I didn't do that before, but Donna was able to convince me that, you know, as times change, we have to as well. So what we say, how we say it becomes very important. So when I work with current clients, we look at the search terms to see how people find them, you know, based on what their audience might be. Like for an IT, it could be IT director, it could be IT manager, it could be IT, any number of things. So they need to be able to understand how people find them. What they also had a hard time understanding is we need to be personable as possible. Could you bring down, go down a little bit there on the summary?
Yep.
I was letting people know what I learned the hard way and what my mission was to help others not make the same mistakes that I had made originally. And we need to do that in the first person. And I think we all realize that. But our clients still think of LinkedIn as being a different type of resume. A resume is third person, but LinkedIn needs to create a conversation, attract people that say, I really want to talk to this person, find out a little more about them. So that needs to be in the first person. I realized that by doing the things that Donna has taught us, that I was getting many more views and more requests to connect. My ranking has gone up considerably. And I asked Donna a few months ago to do a search on, it was executive career, and I can't remember if it was leadership or job search. And what we found was on executive and career, I ranked very high in her network. So I came up on the first page, which is always what we want. The SEO ranking is very important. But we also found that LinkedIn only wanted to give search results for two, not three or four or five. Mm-hmm. So that's something to keep in mind. What are the major things that you want to be found for? I also found that if I went into LinkedIn daily for a few minutes, and I use it sometimes as a stress reliever when I'm working on something, if you like articles and quotes, I shared articles, I made some comments, things like that, my rankings and views would go up. When I didn't, it affected my rankings and how many people viewed my LinkedIn profile. I also believe that we need to do an endorsement campaign, which I haven't done yet. Now, one of my clients has really gotten successful with LinkedIn. I'm working with a lot of IT clients right now, and one who I coached at EDS comes back periodically and recently wanted to move to an IT director role. We worked on those top three things, audience, value, and so what. We did that on LinkedIn as well as his resume, and I asked every bullet that he had items, were they supporting those top three things? If they were, I wanted him to change or to specify that on his LinkedIn. Before we worked together this last time, he wasn't even getting any nibbles. He was sending out resumes all over the place. He was posting them up on boards. And he wasn't getting anything on LinkedIn either. But after he changed his LinkedIn, he sent me an email and said, holy moly, Chris, I'm getting at least five or more requests every week. And most of them were serious requests. So right now he's on the verge of getting the IT director job he wanted. Mm. So making sure that it's personable, that they answer all the value and the so what, and use the SEO really, really helps. And again, endorsement campaigns are very useful, but I really haven't done that yet. And when we do enter our information on jobs, there's one Executive Potential Plus that I've done where I put all kinds of stuff in it. I haven't had a chance to put it in the other ones, but you have a lot more room to put things in your job description than you do up in your summary. So that's always a good thing to remember. Is there any question on LinkedIn before I go into personal branding? Because LinkedIn is a part of branding.
Yeah, this is Barry. I have a question. You talk about personalized. Can you give us a little more, and maybe you'll do it later, about personalized versus too personalized versus not personalized enough? What does personalized mean?
I make it personal. I kind of share part of who I am. In my summary, the very first sentence I say, from the beginning I tackled the business world, I learned the hard way I needed to be clear about who I was and what I wanted to achieve. And so I'm giving people a little information about who I am, what's going on for me. And I said I wanted to make that easier for them because my mission was to support them in being successful by helping them discover their untapped potential, helping them to reach what they never thought possible, and helping their work, their workflow from their life, not be their life. When I worked at EDS, it was your life was your work, and that nearly killed me. But when you allow work to flow from your life, then it becomes something that is much more satisfying for yourself. You feel happier, more energetic, and you become more healthy. So that's what I mean about being personal. It's just those top few sentences that I give something about, share something about myself.
Okay, that's helpful. Personal. Yeah, so people can connect with you and see you're a human and something they connect with, opposed to the traditional from years ago, just the, you know, stale, this is me, I don't have anything to say, and I have no personality.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, you become a successful coach because of the experiences that you've had. You don't just you're born and you're an automatic coach. It grows through wisdom and experience, and sometimes it's successes and sometimes it's failures, but you learn to be determined and committed and all of that. And that's what I was trying to share here in a few sentences.
Get it. Perfect. Thank you for the
Let me add to that, too, if you don't mind. You talked about part of the question was irrelevant or
can you get a little closer to your microphone or speak up a little, Donna?
Is that better?
Thank you.
Am I louder?
Yeah,
Let
good.
Me make sure it's up. Okay. You can have irrelevant experience. For example, have somebody that's changing from being a project manager to a program manager. They may need to move out some of the project management stuff and put in more program manager stuff. So, and then, you know, you were kind of saying, could it get too personal? I've had people talk about their hobbies, and hobbies are good if they relate to the job you're trying to apply to. But if it's not related to the job you're applying to, then it may go too far afield. So it's like giving a little bit of personal information, but doing it in a way that relates to what you're trying to market for. So.
Absolutely. Good point, Donna. That's exactly what I was trying to do here. Because there's a lot of things that I could have shared, but that wouldn't have gotten me anywhere. If anything, it might have been a turnoff.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I have a question. This is Katie. So how do you find which keywords are the best? You were talking about how they only take one or two, not three or four.
Uh-huh.
How do you find out which are going to get the highest ranking? I mean, how do you do that?
One of the ways that I found was looking at the endorsements, what people put in. Like we were talking about different skill descriptions and that. That's one way. Another is jobs, you know, putting IT and then seeing what kind of things come up.
So, I mean, did you test it just by putting it in the search box? Is that what you did?
And I also looked at the endorsements.
But, yeah, so for example, if I type in executive coach, for, and I've got to do it, like, say, for first connections to get rid of some of the jobs and things like that, you know, who is coming up first for me? And you can see actually one of our coaches, Sharon Rich, is there. If I don't remember which search. I think it was Career Coach that Chris came up on my first page at that point. But what the, I think what you're saying is that you want to decide what you want to be found for. So
right.
if it's an engineering job, then you've got to pick maybe two types of engineering jobs that you want to be found for. You can try to put some more terms in, but you're not probably going to get found for the third thing. It used to be you could optimize for three things, but LinkedIn changed the search engine. And so you really can only be found probably for two things. So
it's
you deciding what you want to be found for, then what you're going to do is search engine optimize, and then you're going to search for yourself. So,
right.
I mean, I can see here, Chris shows up as
very
high.
And you do only first connections.
Well, I do it for first connections because I have so many connections. If I would probably do
but
it.
But you would just do it in general.
Yeah, I would do it for second. I'd maybe do it for general and just see what comes up. So you can do it for all of those. And you can see it changes, too.
Mm-hmm.
So, but, yeah, you want to do a search to see how what you did impacted how you're found.
Yeah.
So you use that term, and then you go do a search on it. Okay, Chris, I'm sorry. Take it back.
No, quite all right. You said that better than me. If there's no other questions on LinkedIn specifically, I can start talking a little bit about branding, which also works into LinkedIn as well.
Can I just go back and ask kind of a segue question or just a question for a sec?
Sure.
Thanks. You know, I just want to say all this stuff we do on Mondays makes total sense to me. And I know it's for us, the coaches, and I know that we – you know, we get the knowledge and then we work the clients. It just seems to me, and I keep thinking often about this, like the one we just did, gosh, would it make sense, and we can talk about it later, but would it make sense to have something for clients where they could get this or buy it? I mean, I don't mind doing the one-on-one, but geez, it just seems like this stuff is like more than invaluable. So I just want to put that out. What hit me was that whole thing you just went through was like a gold mine of about 3 hours worth of training. You know, if you actually went on with people and went through it and did the, I mean, I was like, wow. So that's just my comment. I don't know what to do with it.
Thanks.
So.
And part of my taking some time from not coaching myself for a while is to look at those kinds of things. But
even
from the last one, I did a clip of the video and put it up as one of our links for our clients. So,
that's cool. That's cool.
So
that's
we're starting in that direction. So we'll explore
it's just
it.
Like that was so valuable, that just piece we just went through. And I just go, wow, that was like all compressed, of course, for us. So, okay, cool. Thank you.
Thanks. Okay.
I have one other question. So I can do a search for career coach even when I'm logged in as my profile?
Yeah.
And it'll show if I'm going to come up or not.
Yeah, absolutely. You come up in your own search.
Okay.
And so searching for yourself. But the other thing you may want to do or have the client do is ask a couple of different friends to do a search on the term, too, because it's going to come up different in every person's search.
Mm-hmm.
So
because everyone has a different network.
Right. So you could ask Chris to do a search. You could ask Barry to do a search and give you where you're falling as well.
When you say the network, you're talking about within LinkedIn of who knows who and that whole thing. Yeah, okay.
Right.
But you come up in your own searches,
And just to be clear, you're talking about searching in LinkedIn. You're not talking about searching in Google. That might bring you to LinkedIn.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. Does that make sense, Katie?
Yeah. Yeah, I was just trying to find when I come up.
Yeah. Cool. Thank you.
So, yeah, you show up in your own searches. And Chris is coming up higher than me in my search here, so.
Under what? Under career coach?
Yeah, for career coach, when I very first started teaching LinkedIn to coaches, I got bummed out because I did a training for like 800 coaches, and then I went from 1 to like 10 on my page.
And so if you don't come up in the search, you just don't have that word infused in your profile enough.
Enough, right. Okay. But like I said, or like Chris said too, is it used to be you could be found for career coach, executive coach, leadership coach,
right.
Life coach. Now you can only really be found for two. So you got to decide what you're trying to optimize for.
Mm-hmm. And if you put those kind of keywords in all your different job descriptions, which, as I mentioned, I only did the one, then it's very easy for you to keep coming up even better and better each time.
Got it.
So look at she's got it here, and actually we were doing career coach, but the same thing. And then it's in her first job, it's in her older job, it's in her job title. So she's really search engine optimized well, and she's been doing this a long time and has been showing up high for a long time.
That's how I met Donna. 6 or 7 years ago.
Yep.
So LinkedIn is a very important part of branding, but if you don't know what your value is, if you don't know what you want people to know about you, it's not going to matter because nobody's going to find you. We're going to be hit and miss, actually. So even though with branding, those top three things, audience, value, and so what, are extremely important. There's more to it than that. Everyone has a brand whether they know it or not, and it's all part of your body language and other people's perception. And you may think you're projecting the right things to others, but each person only sees a portion of you at that particular moment in time. So if you're in, say, a corporation and you're working in this one area, another person down the hallway might see you and see you in a certain way, or your leader sees you in a different way, your teammates see you in a different way, because our brains don't like a vacuum, so they fill in the pieces. So if you're acting angry or something, one day because you're stressed out and you say something that you wished you hadn't said or whatever, another person who really doesn't know you very well may look at you and say, wow, that person is very aggressive. So you want to remember that you're the whole package. You're a story, and you carry that story with you all the time. And depending on the page you're open to is what a certain person is going to see. I had a manager who was a client of mine at EDS, and she really wanted this new position that had opened up in her organization. It had a whole lot more responsibility. And her new boss, who just came in, was someone she knew from the outside, so she thought she had it in the bag. But her boss gave the job to someone else, and she was crushed. And when I asked her, well, what did your boss say? Her boss had told her that she didn't know she did that. My client thought that marketing herself, telling people about what she did, was bragging. And I think a lot of women consider that as bragging. She had no problem in marketing to her marketing her own group, but she just couldn't do that for herself until we worked on getting her over that. So people weren't getting what her story was. So I created a three-step process that I use with clients. The first is defining your story. You know, what do you want to be known for and why? How do you want to be looked at? The second step is packaging your story. You need to have a consistent message in speech, behavior, written, whether it's LinkedIn, your resume. It all needs to be going in the same direction. And the way you can find that out is I ask my clients, because I've done this myself, for myself, is to ask people, what are three things that come to mind when they see when they hear my name or they think of me? What are those three things? Now, for me, I asked my coach to ask people what those three things were because I didn't want them to feel that they couldn't, you know, they didn't want to hurt my feelings. But if you ask the right way, and if people are honest, they'll tell you. So that's one way of knowing how they perceive you. The third thing is telling your story succinctly and courteously. You can be courteous, you know, it's very easy when you're just in a regular situation, but you also need to be courteous when you're in a highly stressful situation. You don't want people to hear the words and you can't take them back. You want to be respectful and be respected all the way through. So you, wherever you are, it's wondering, what do I want my audience to take away from my meeting, from my speech, from my coaching call, from the conversation I had over coffee, whatever. And I know sometimes it feels a little regimented, but it's being, you know, who am I? How do I want to show up in the world, kind of thing. So it's being more deeply reflective of who we are and projecting that out. When I was doing process consulting work at EDS, I was also beginning to do some coaching at EDS, and people were seeing a difference in how I handled situations and how that affected my performance. And over time, people began asking me, what are you doing differently? How can I do the same thing? I go into my performance review and I get average and I'm working my butt off. And you seem to always be right on the ball and you leave work on time and everything. And you're in the top 1% of our organization. How are you doing that? And it was all about working smarter, not harder. And that had to do a lot with, what did I want people to know? What was my consistent message? What did I want people to know was my value? So I look at branding as being the most important aspect of selling ourselves. It's not just a job anymore. White-collar jobs are decreasing at an alarming rate. As technology takes over many of the job functions that humans have normally done, and they're doing more and more of that. So we need a game plan, and that in how are we going to see the opportunities as technology changes our business environment. And that starts with understanding ourselves and solidifying what we want others to know about ourselves. And that's your brand. And that is the hardest thing my clients have to do. I had one client who said, you know, I leave these conversations, I'm all pumped up, then I try to think about what my story is, and I start to get a migraine. But eventually he got it, and he was able to move forward in his job in a very difficult competitive area. So these things are very important. And, you know, there's a lot more that could be said about this, but that's basically a 30,000-foot view of branding and LinkedIn being an important part of that. The end.
Okay, I got a question before
very
the end.
Nice, I had a question Chris. Too.
Before the end's over, that's very good. So the example you gave before we got talking in branding, I think the example you gave was about the person that saw themselves a certain way, you know, real estate or the other.
Oh, yeah.
In coaching, we talk about identity, what one's identity is, you know, how people see each other, and the identity has values and beliefs and a whole bunch of stuff together. What's your take on identity versus branding? Is it different? Is it the same? How does it all show up? Any thoughts on that?
I think, and this is, I don't know what other people think or the branding experts think, but in my own feeling, you have to reconnect with who you are, and that's your identity. You know, what are my values? What do I believe in? What are my needs and wants and all that stuff that makes me who I am? Some days better than other days. You know, I try to do the best I can kind of thing. That to me is my identity. It is not connected to work. It is connected to who I am. Branding takes another step away from that. It's like saying, okay, this is who I am. I don't need people to know I feel like I'm the Pope or something like that. You know, I'm very spiritual or I'm very this or I'm very that. Branding is a higher view, I think, a less personal view of what I want people to take away with. I want them to think I'm authentic. I want them to think that I I follow through in my commitments, that I have integrity, that they can count on me kind of thing. So identity is that deep, profound thing I consider profound. And then branding is the story I want other people to see about me.
Mm, perfect.
Yeah, that's good. Thank you.
I have a question. So in an attempt to go from 30,000 feet to maybe 15,000 feet on the story, could you, your step one is define your story and why. Are you talking about, the question there is, what goes into that? Is it your mission statement? Is it like a personal mission statement? Is it what you're trying to accomplish? Could you maybe speak a little bit about the kinds of things that somebody could think about to come up with that story?
There's a lot of things that can come to that. For the first thing that I ask people to do is to see how other people view them.
Hmm.
What are the three words that come up for you? Kind of thing. That's the first thing. And I ask them to come up with their own idea of who they think they are. You know, I'm persistent. Mm-hmm. I'm determined. Mm-hmm. Somebody else might say she's obstinate. She's aggressive. She's intense. It's good. You want to know what are the negatives as well as what are the positives. So you can look at that and say, what am I projecting that shows that? What is it that's inside of me? You know, is it because I'm so passionate about something that I come off too intense? Is it because I'm in a management position and they're perceiving me as being extremely aggressive because I'm a woman as opposed to a man who they would think is just being commanding and a leader? I don't know, but those are things that you first look at. You know, what is other people's perception, and how do I want them to see me? I also ask people to use strength finders. I know we use other programs within Donna's group. I like strength finders because it helps people to look at the language they use to describe themselves a little differently. One person might have commanding as their one of their top five themes, and they're actually being looked at as a bully, which is overusing it. Someone else may be commanding, but they're kind of in the background, so they're underusing it. So how can they balance that kind of thing out? That's why I like strength finders. They sometimes do value. They look at their values. I've used some coach-you things that help them to look at values, their needs, their wants kind of thing, so they can see who they are. And, okay, you're an IT director, or you want to be an IT director. How does this work with leadership? How does this work with, you know, all the other kinds of things that you're wanting to look at? I share with them if they want to be a leader, the leadership article that Donna has on her website. You know, what are the various things that a leader needs to have in order to be a good leader? So depending on where they're wanting to go depends on what their story is. But I have found a lot of IT people, and being in IT for 25 years, I know a lot of them. There are some programmers who would like to move forward, but because they're a programmer, a lot of their characteristics are more into the analytical, not always a great personality, they're introverted, whatever. So we use Myers-Briggs. We use leadership styles. We use communication styles. So they get a feeling for what their story should be.
Mm.
And can I add to that, Chris?
Sure.
I also to bring it into becoming more concrete for what you're trying to accomplish, focusing on the job that you want or the career that you want. And one of the ways to do that is also to look at the job descriptions that are within your organization that you want to, the job that you want to do, or getting a job ad for a job externally that you want to do. You know, you start with who you are, and then you start looking at how do I marry that to what I'm trying to accomplish. And there are, you know, you could Google what is that job like, but getting some external information beyond just what's internal to start channeling that story and learning how to tell that story from the standpoint of what you're trying to accomplish.
They do a lot of research.
Yeah.
Based on, like you said, the job, and then I had a client who we looked at the job the job requirements and that, and we changed a few of the words in her resume to reflect those things because she actually did them. She just didn't have the right words to do that, and having the right words is extremely important, and that's based on what it is that you're wanting to do.
Yep. Any other questions before we move on to resume talk?
Thank you, Chris.
Oh, yeah, you're welcome.
That was awesome. Okay,
yes,
so
thank
let's
you.
Do some clapping, guys.
I love it.
That was fantastic, Chris. Thank you so much. And I'm definitely looking forward to more presentations from our amazing coaches. And this is a good time to say that if you don't, if you're not comfortable giving feedback on resumes, which some of us aren't as geared towards, that's something that Chris does well. And so we can always do a partnership where maybe the client does a couple of sessions with Chris just on their resume and then comes back to you. So you can be their job search coach, you can be their career coach, but if you get into where they really need some specific feedback, there's two things you can do. One is you can refer them, you know, through me to Chris for 2 to 3 sessions and then have them come back to you. The other is that we do have some resume writers that take it and actually write the resume for them. So what Chris does is more give them feedback and guide them, whereas if they want, you know, if they really don't want to do their resume themselves, we can also refer them out. So just wanted to let you know that that's a partnership that we can do. And this really flows well into the discussion of resumes. But I first wanted to let you know, as I had just mentioned, that on our LinkedIn page, I did add a section here. And this is LinkedIn profile. So if you went from job search to job search strategies to LinkedIn, and then from LinkedIn, you would go to profile. If you get to the profile section, I've added signaling on LinkedIn to recruiters that you're in a job search, and that's just a clip from the video that we did together last time. So did want to let you know that that got up. And the other piece that got up was how to do an endorsement campaign, which is also on the LinkedIn profile, down on number 8. And I believe that everyone could do a LinkedIn endorsement campaign, not just if you're in a job search. So we now have a section on how to do a LinkedIn endorsement campaign, including an example of an email that you could use. You could just highlight that, copy it, paste it into a Word document, and modify it for what kind of endorsements you want, and also linking to your profile, not my profile. So did want to let you guys know that some information has been added that's going to be helpful for LinkedIn.
That's great. Thank you.
Yeah. So the other topic that's a main topic for us today is resumes and chronological resumes, which you could get to by clicking on job search, then clicking on job search marketing collateral, then from there, resumes, which takes you to the resume checklist, and from there, going to resume examples, and then we do have the resume format, the one that we recommend that's chronological, and we have examples of functional resumes. So let me page down. So I'm going to be talking about points from this page, which is the page 2 of the document that I sent you. And to talk about first chronological resumes, which are the most common traditional format that we usually see. It highlights your work history. And human resources professionals are very comfortable with it because that's the most traditional format. But the drawback being that sometimes it's hard to see the skills in a chronological resume and see how it's really highlighted. So if we're working on a resume, first, just as Chris had said, the first thing you're going to want to do is think about what job you want to get, what are you trying to achieve. And so in this case, this person's wanting to become an HR generalist, and so they have what they're wanting to achieve. They've hopefully got some job ads in front of them. And what they do then is they put their information on how they've worked and what's really, I call it a chronological resume, but what it is reverse chronology because they're going to show what they did recently and then they're going to go to what they did right before that and then they're going to go to a job that's right before that one. And in this case, then, they went back to about 5 jobs. And so you can see that it's chronological. But another format for resumes is functional. And what a functional resume does is it highlights the key skills. And the way that you're going to determine what those key skills are is based on the job ad that you're looking at for, say, HR generalist, and seeing what are the most important skills. And once we determine the most important skills, then we're going to put it into a functional resume format. And so we have an example of a pure functional resume. And so it does give a little summary at the front, just like the other ones. But then it goes to the critical skills or functions that the person has performed. And usually you can see them go from 2 to 5. I say, you know, 4 or 5 is the most effective format. So in this case, workforce planning optimization is a function or a skill. Performance management is a function or a skill. Training development is a function or a skill. Risk management, and actually they have a 6th one, financial and business analysis. Oh, actually 7th. So in this case, what they've done is they've taken all of the jobs that they've done, maybe they have done 10 jobs, and they've moved the bullet points from being under the jobs chronologically to being under jobs by a subject or function. And usually what they'll do is they'll say, at company X, I reduced overtime skills. So, for example, at Xerox, I reduced overtime costs. At IBM, I helped them know that they needed to continue to contract for radiology services. At Little Company of Mary, I performed a wait time study. Back at Xerox again, I persuaded leadership to relocate. And maybe again at IBM, I created staffing plans as a project manager. So it's pulling bullet points from all the different jobs that relate to a function and putting them into that function. Then maybe in performance management, Little Company of Mary, I analyzed Salesforce proficiency, which is performance management. At Xerox, I improved lab services. And then going into the next one and so forth. So it's organized into functional bullet points rather than being chronological or historical. There is a third type of resume, before I ask if there's any questions, that's called a hybrid resume. And in a hybrid resume, what they do is they put their bullet points into the functions, and you can see functions here, but they also do include a chronological history. In this case, it was just two jobs, but in another one, you know, it could be 10 jobs. And again, in this one, it's two jobs. They have three functions, and then they have two jobs. But in the jobs, they do include some bullet points, and I think that's a smart way to do the hybrid, is to include a few bullet points as well. So those are the three types: chronological, functional, and hybrid. And I will talk about who is best to utilize that type, but before I do that, I want to stop and ask, is there any questions? Do you see the difference between the three types?
When you
Donna, this is Chris.
Yes.
I see the difference, and I can see there are different reasons why you would do that.
Mm-hmm.
But I've never really seen anyone do that, so I guess.
Oh, really? Okay.
No, I never have.
Okay. I've been doing functional resumes for myself for going far back as 25 years, so it's been around a long time.
Oh, yes, I've heard of it. I just didn't.
Yeah. Yeah, you hadn't seen one, so now.
No, never have, and I was just wondering, you know, a career changer.
Yes.
If you're, would that be if they're like in pharmaceuticals and they're going over to robotics, that
yes.
kind of thing?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, exactly, and I'll talk about an example.
Okay, thank you.
But let me throw it out. It sounded like there was other questions.
This is Barry. Maybe you can answer it when you get into the three different types. I'm curious percentages. Like, is it like, you know, some large percentages chronological, and I mean chronological, and then so on and so forth?
I think it's probably about 20% that are either functional or hybrid.
Is it mostly because chronological, you can just kind of see it or scan it, or the brain works that way, you think?
I think chronological just evolved because what employers wanted to see is what jobs have you done and what did you do in those jobs. And so that's the main, you know, resume format out there. Functional came because it's hard to see the functions in the resume. You have to go and read the whole resume before you see if the person has truly done everything that you're looking for. And I want to say that some human resources folks are suspicious of the functional or hybrid format because they know that people are hiding employment gaps or job hopping. But I think over time you're seeing more and more people really buy into the concept. And one thing that you can do is submit both types. You can give a chronological resume and functional resume together. But I will say as long as 25 years ago, a functional resume helped me land a job. So, and it was a job where I was changing careers. And so, for example, if you had a job career changer, going back up here, say you had an engineer who was changing to quality assurance. That person is an engineer, has been an engineer, but they have done a lot of quality assurance work in the work that they've done. So they might have a header that says audit, and they might have a header that says quality assurance, and pull from all the different jobs they've done. And maybe they haven't quite done the quality assurance, but they've interfaced with it. And that can help a hiring manager understand that they are qualified to work in quality assurance. For example, they could say supported audits, used quality assurance processes to examine product quality, which every engineer is going to do, interfaced with quality assurance personnel to correct deficiencies. That's something that all engineers do, and it just helps the hiring manager or the human resources person see that this person does have skill in the areas that are required for this job. Does that clarify it? Do you have more questions?
Yeah, no, I think it helps. It sounds like the biggest thing is that the reverse chronological can look for gaps, where the other one you don't see it as much or it doesn't jump out at you. Yeah.
Right, exactly. So the people who – Arianna, did you have a question? I thought I might have heard you.
No, I'm good.
Okay. So the kinds of people that benefit from having a functional or hybrid resume, and by the way, I like hybrid the very best, but one is career changers, and I just talked about an example for that. It's also – people who are returning to a previous career. An example of that is I had a client recently who realized that he was the happiest 8 years ago when he was an employee relations person. But since then, he had moved on to being a safety manager and employee relations person, then just a safety manager, and then more of like a functional GM kind of leader. And so what we did was we helped him create a functional resume. And so safety manager was one of his headers. I'm sorry, employee relations manager was one of his headers. And we were able to pull all his old bullet points. But in every job that he did some employee relations. So we were able to pull those bullet points in. And then union relations. He'd done a lot of union relations, which related quite closely to employee relations. And so that was in his current job. So we were able to pull those in. And he did land an employee relations job with this functional resume. And this was only a couple of months ago. And he's happy again. He's really happy in his job. So by being able to do a functional resume, if he would have submitted a chronological resume, what they would have seen was like GM kind of job and a safety manager's job, and they may not have even looked back to the jobs where he had actually been an employee relations manager. So having a functional resume really helped him go back to a previous career. Also, people who have employment gaps, this is a great way to camouflage, and that's why the human resources person, people know that. It's a way to camouflage employment gaps and what some people would call job hoppers. It's a way to pull together and not show so much all the different jobs that they've been in. And I'm going to talk about those two in just a second because I have some links I want you to take a peek at. But also, people wanting to move into the next level of management, functional resumes are very helpful for that because oftentimes we've acted as the manager of the department or we have done skills that managers need, but we haven't been that manager. They haven't been in that position. And an example of that, right now I have a client that's a project manager that wants to move into program manager or program management officer, and he's also looking at IT director. And so we're looking at creating a functional resume for him because he's been an acting program manager, so he's done a lot of the things that that entails, and he, in past jobs going all the way back, has done things that are program management. So we can move bullet points to the front that say participated in team to select project management methodologies, which is what a program manager does. We can move bullet points that say reviewed project manager's work or interface with upper management to prioritize projects. We can move those to the top of his resume so that a hiring manager or human resources professional can see that he has experience doing that job. And it's interesting because once we took a job ad for program manager, pulled out the main functions, he had done everything that a program manager did. It's just that he did it in five different jobs. so we can show that he's done everything that he would need to do, and it helps him move up. He has not landed that position yet, but he once he changed his LinkedIn profile to that, and Barry, I'll be to you in just a second. Once he changed his profile to a program manager-oriented LinkedIn profile, he is now getting recruiters calling him for that. So we optimized for those keywords. Barry, your question?
You might have answered my question. I was going to ask if it would help to put that stuff in the cover letter. Mm-hmm. I think the answer is yes, but on the other hand, if you have an ATS tracking system, a cover letter may or may not catch it.
Yeah. So you know, when we took it, it's all the same bullets.
Yeah, you just change the order.
The order in which they applied, and we emphasized keywords, and now he's getting tapped. He hasn't landed the job, but he's getting interviews.
Yeah, I also think if you take the ATS electronic out of for a minute, just go back to the human, you know, we look at whatever we look at, and so sometimes just getting a new perspective or a new view has people see things differently.
Yes, absolutely. And what this did, too, is help him own that he could do the job.
Oh, that's key, isn't it, though?
Yes, it is. It gave him the confidence because we could go back and, like, when we started, he's like, I don't know if I can do this. And as we pulled out the bullets and showed that he had done everything that that job entailed, all of a sudden he's like, oh, of course I can be a program manager. And immediately, within a week, he was an acting program manager. So that was kind of interesting. I think the shift in how he saw himself hit exactly what Chris is saying. He now held himself as a program manager, and people saw it, and he immediately was an acting program manager. So that ties back to what Chris was talking about. Other questions?
I have a comment which might help for some people. It could be limited. You know, the functional resumes, so if you have employment gaps, depending what the employment gap is, like during the horrible economy, if you're out of a job for a while and you don't, it depends how long, but you could put, you know, assuming you did this, you know, I volunteered here, I did my training skills there, to show that you're actually doing something. Now, you're not working somewhere, but it is, you can show what you're doing with your time. It depends how big the gap is. I've seen that work.
Yeah, in functional resumes, you can pull volunteer bullet points into that as well. And so it more legitimizes the experience that you've had because you're right alongside it. You've got, I worked at Xerox, but I also at the Red Cross did this. And so it, again, sort of legitimizes what you're doing. Does that handle that one, Barry?
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
Thank you.
We do have a section just as a reminder when we go to the resume checklist, which is the first link from, if you go to create your job search collateral, then you go to resume checklist, and then you go to resume tips, which is this page. We do have a link that helps them talk about how to handle employment gaps, which becomes part of your brand. You need to be able to talk to why you had the employment gap or what you were doing at that time. And it's interesting because these links on here actually do talk about functional resumes being a great way to handle that. And I wanted to also call your attention to an area that I've added to the resume page recently based on some discussion I had with a coach. Does job hopping hurt your personal brand? And I think it's a little bit outdated to say that job hopping does hurt your personal brand if the job hopping is more like a year and a half or 2 years. So if you see a resume where someone has been at 3 jobs in the last 6 years, that's much more acceptable than it used to be. It still may be a concern, and so, you know, the functional resume lets you kind of cover that a little bit so that they only see that at the very end if it's on the hybrid. But I also wanted to kind of let everyone know that job hopping is you know, job moving is more acceptable than it used to be. I found some articles that say that the average amount of years that people are on a job right now is 4 years. So that would have been considered job hopping 20 years ago because people were able to stay in a job for 30 years. But the companies aren't there. Their functions have been outsourced. The layoffs have occurred, and so people really can't do that. So I've got and I'm really hoping you guys go back and read these articles, but I've got an article here, Welcome to the Era of Job Hopping. You should plan on switching jobs every 3 years for the rest of your life. And then in the IT arena, it's even shorter. The average tenure at a job is 3 years, and what they're really looking to see is someone who's been at a job for something like 18 months. So I've got some articles here on the turnover in the tech sector, and then I've got some pro articles to job hopping, how long is too long to stay in the same job, three huge risks for doing so, and why job hoppers make the best employees. And, you know, there's lots of reasons. They've gotten multiple perspectives. They've been able to do different things at different companies, and they're usually more flexible. So I did want to let you guys know that in personal branding, you know, longevity is something that some human resources and hiring managers would look for, but and you know, they may throw people out if they, as a candidate, if they have moved around. But there's plenty of people out there that are looking for that and are open to that. So it isn't necessarily the dire thing that it was at one point.
I just want to check a distinction. When you say job hopping, does that mean company to company, or does that mean job to job in a company?
For some people, it would just be company to company. For some people, seeing you move around in Toyota every 2 years. But, you know, in a lot of companies, you only can stay in a job for 2 years and they rotate.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Any other comments or questions?
Donna, this is Chris.
Yes.
Would this also apply to... contractors who sign up to work for a 3-month contract or a year contract or whatever?
Yeah, so I suggest that if it's a contractor that they, and they may have had some inside jobs as well, that they label on their LinkedIn profile and in their resume that it is a contract job. There's one way to go about that is to show each contract job. You know, I did 2 years at Medtronic. I did 3 years at Genentech. I did, 1 year at, and show them each as contract jobs. Or sometimes what we do is combine and say, IT contractor, and then show each job underneath that as, each place that they've been, so that it shows that you were a contractor during that whole period. So there's two ways to go about it, and you really have to get in there and discuss with the client to help them figure out which way is the best way to do it.
Okay.
And remember, as coaches, we're guiding them, so we're opening up the conversation about it and helping them with some things to read and some ideas and some things that we've seen work for people. But we do need to be able to be in the conversation with them about whether a chronological or functional resume is the best thing for them, and or if they want to put both in so that people get a real feel for that they can do that job. It's just that they've done pieces on different jobs. Another category of people who benefit from a functional resume is an older worker. Sometimes, the longevity of what they've done doesn't shine through to really show that they've done the different pieces of that job. And
is that a particular age these days?
Older workers are, and, it is a way to kind of not show how old you are if you just do a functional resume. But, people think that there's more ageism out there than there is. There may be some companies that wouldn't take you, and boy, if you're in advertising, you better be under 40. But, you know, I'd say, you know, when you're getting up to 55, 60, which we do get, people that are looking for jobs in that age range, functional resume to kind of cover that up may be a good thing, and dropping off some jobs and making sure that you've colored your hair so that you've got that youthful look. You know, we were talking about the
physical. I do color my hair, and I'm proud of it.
I confuse the gray. That's what I do.
Yeah. Right. That's
so, you know, that really helps. But and we sometimes we have to advise them on, you know, coloring their hair, getting contacts, wearing a suit that, you know, isn't dated, going ahead and shopping.
Polyester, right?
You know, yeah, going ahead and shopping in the right place. So, and you know, projecting themselves as youthful, you know, showing their energy, jumping in to do things, you know, definitely going back to how you're seen, you know, it definitely have coached a lot of people over the last 5 to 10 years about looking younger, appearing younger, not talking about when you're going to retire. You know, I've had a couple clients that kept talking to their fellow employees about when they were going to retire, and that really hurt their personal brand. So, you know, appearing youthful sometimes is important too. Any other comments or questions? Okay. One thing that I did want to share, too, it was interesting as I was doing my research for this to pull together notes that supported my concepts. I found one of our resume writers that we recommend, Steve Burdan, on the ladders, and I'm reading along, and all of a sudden it's a quote from Steve Burdan. So I wanted to share that with you, though, because I thought it was a great quote. It said, the most effective resume is a hybrid that combines both functional and chronological information with a summary section that outlines career highlights and key qualities and accomplishments, and a chronological section that puts those elements into context in a well-supported blurbs for each job title that not only state where you worked and when, but also the nature of your top achievements and details of your job responsibilities. So one of our resume writers highly recommends the hybrid as a good choice. The other people that might benefit from a hybrid are students and new graduates. What we can do in that, and I've done this before with students, is taken projects they did in school and made them bullet points under the functions as well as any job that they did. So with a student recently, we took bullets from his volunteer work, from his college work, and from the jobs he'd done and made a functional resume that was very effective, and he ended up landing a position at Microsoft. So, you know, that really works. I think, yeah, the reentering, that's like having a, you know, job gap. So I think that covers those. And like I said, the only drawbacks I see with these is that sometimes human resources professionals feel wary of them. But I don't think it's going to be every human resources person. And so I think if it makes sense for what they're marketing, that you do it, and you know that some people won't like it and some people will love it. And if the person loves it, you get the job. And I've seen plenty of people get jobs with functional resumes. Any comments or questions on that?
Yeah, I have a question about not ageism so much as, so like I'm 61, not old but seasoned, and you have people in their 20s and 30s that are recruiters because they're younger in the job force. And so I'm wondering if the millennials or not, they're the younger people that are working in companies, not that they're ageism or discrimination, but the way they do culture, do they do things different than we do? And does that have any impact, do you think?
Yes. And I think if you're an older worker in an environment with a lot of millennials or with a millennial-led company, and I've had a few of those, that you want to think about and read about how do millennials think and act. And one of the things is you want to be collaborative, you want to be team-oriented, and, yeah, you do want to shift how you're being with them so that they relate to you and so that you can work together well.
Thank you.
But I would also say that I don't think it's the millennial human resources people that are against functional resumes. I think it's actually more the older people who are so used to seeing chronological and think that that's the only way to do it. So I really think it's actually the older HR people that are holding people back from being able to present themselves in a way that, that matches up with the job, because they've done the job. It's just they've done it in different pieces. So I wanted to talk a little bit about questions that you might use to help people determine whether they should do a chronological versus a functional resume. So one question I would ask, which ties back to what Chris was talking about, is what are you trying to, like, who is your audience? What are you trying to get as your job? So, are you know, and what do you need to highlight for the HR or hiring manager in order to help them understand that you can do this job? Another question would be, when have you used this skill? If it's in the last job, then, you know, we're in good shape and we can stay chronological. But if you've used this job used this skill a long time ago, we may need to think about doing a functional resume. I wanted to throw it open to you guys, though, to come up with some questions that would help someone determine whether they needed to do a functional or a chronological resume. So maybe I can just go to each person, and you can either have a comment or an idea of how you might coach somebody around whether to use a chronological or functional resume, or a question. And I'd like to start with Barry, if you don't mind. Do you have any thoughts about coaching someone or any questions that you could share that would help
with this decision?
Yeah, Barry, if you don't mind.
You know, I'm sitting here more of a coaching hat than a telling hat, and I actually think I would coach them through. I'd see a couple things. One is, what have they done in the past? What job are they looking for? How are their gaps looking? But I think I would actually get in with them and have them see the difference and have them, you know, see what lands for them.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's how I would do it. But it all depends on, you know, what they have.
Right. So you'd kind of have their current resume, and then you'd say, I do have some examples to show you of functional resumes. Yeah, I think that's great.
Yeah.
And we do have examples. So if you go to, if you came from Create Your Job Search Collateral, then you would go to Resume Examples, and then you'd have our number one format that we love that's a chronological resume. And then you'd go to Functional Resume Formats, and you'd be able to show them a functional resume format and explain it, and then see what seemed to make sense based on knowing the difference between the two.
I think there's one other thing, not knowing who this client is. You know, I might see what, like, resonates for them, or if there's any, sometimes people are, well, I have this, they don't say it, but I have this fear that this is what's going to be found out or something. So there might be a place for some coaching in there, and it might not be about the resume, but I think once they get clear and they feel really good about it, then I think we're in good shape, because if they put something together and it's like, oh, but it's not quite what I want, but it fits, you know, it's going to come across somehow. So I might do some coaching with them around that.
Yeah, so you'd be asking some questions to help them discover what made sense. Great. That's fantastic, Barry. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chris, what are your thoughts or questions around this that would help with coaching?
Well, I usually ask someone if they would share their resume with me first. And once we had that, then I would, of course, look it over and then ask them what direction are they looking and going. You know, is it a new kind of job altogether? Is it, say they're a manager right now and they want to lead the organization in their particular area, so it's more of a executive or director kind of position, then we would look at, and it might be outside because they haven't been able to get anyone to look at it inside. So we would start looking at the gaps. We would look at, are they looking at the same industry? Are they looking at crossing into a different industry? What kinds of experience have they had in leading teams? You know, those kinds of things to broaden what it is that they're doing. If I don't see it on the resume, then I would be asking specific questions. I have this one client who wants to lead an organization, but I don't see anything on his resume that talks mm-hmm. to leading teams or leading anything. Mm-hmm. So I will be asking him more about that. So it's broadening, being more specific on what are their skills so you can identify any gaps.
That's a great point, is sometimes they've done the function or skill that they need to apply for the job, but it may not be on their resume. So asking them questions, saying, okay, let's look at some job ads, or let's think about what this job would be. You know, think about what your current boss does, and is that on your resume? And oftentimes it's not, and yet they have done it. They just haven't put it there.
Right.
The other thing you're saying is that you would ask questions to find out what category they fall in. If it's just they're getting a job that's similar to a job they've done before, if it's a new career, a new job, if it's a step up and so forth. So you're also identifying, is it a change situation or is it stasis? Is it the same type of situation?
Yes.
Great. Okay. Vicki, are you on the line?
I am.
Okay. What questions or how would you coach somebody around either resume or how to be functional or chronological?
Well, a couple things I'll qualify by sharing with the group. I've written resumes for some colleagues and for some younger folks in my field as a mentor. I haven't really done that much as a coach. But one of the things that's in my field, particularly in my unique field, I've been in communication almost my whole life and in the political arena. And so I myself have used and recommended hybrid resumes a lot because it helps us tie together what might look like job hopping to someone else. Mm-hmm. There's a reason that we've gone from one chain to another. And often when we get in and out of government, our job title look funny sometimes, as I'm sure you know, with government titles.
Yes.
So that's hybrid.
yeah, hybrid, or you retitle the jobs in parentheses is another way to do that. But yeah, sort of
right.
Like who would know what a, you know, GS5 whatever blah 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 that is.
Right.
If you put it into a functional resume, then it's easier to see it.
Right. And in my most recent example, I worked for the governor in the state, but I did that in two separate agencies. So, but I was working for the same core people in both cases and was working off the same agenda. And a public information officer who's working as part of the governor's team is actually doing a different set of things than one that works within the agency full time. So, I've helped people to describe their work a little differently because we get to where we assume that everybody knows what I do as a PIO because everybody I know in my world knows what I do. And you know how that goes. So a lot of times, and again, I'm just doing this as a colleague, not as a coach, so I'm very informal with them, but one of the approaches I've taken that really helps is just to detach people from the process of the resume. Like I think it was Chris who was mentioning that earlier, too, when she was talking about personal branding. I might ask things like, you know, what's been your favorite accomplishment at that job? Or what did you do that you didn't expect you would be doing? And just help them start to tell me a story, and then you can kind of direct them toward accomplishments from there.
Excellent. And you bring up one that I'm going to add to the document, which is people who are moving from government to private jobs or to corporate jobs, a functional resume may really help them as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to say, if you did it as a mentor, you don't have to say you did it as a mentor. You just have to say you did it.
Okay.
Own it, Vicki. Own it, girl. You got it.
I was feeling like all of you guys are in a much different realm than I am here.
Oh, no. I was in government, too. I understand.
No, just own it like you got to own it like we want our clients to own it. If you did it, you did it. It doesn't matter whether you were paid to do it. It doesn't matter if it was volunteer. It doesn't matter, you know, if it was a different kind of company. You did that, and you need to own it. And that's what we're doing with our clients a lot of times. Okay, Ariana.
Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, building on what was already shared, I mean, I think I take a very similar approach. I like to talk about the differences between among the different types of resume, but also understand, you know, what the client is looking for. And I think, you know, a couple of questions that I tend to ask around that is just, you know, understanding in their from their perspective, you know, how closely linked do they see their future role being to what they've done in the past? So if it's, you know, is it a leap? Do they consider it a leap? Or do they see it as maybe a natural progression or closely linked? So I think depending on some of their answers there, that would really get to the heart of whether we, you know, a chronological would be good or if we would go to a hybrid or functional. And also really outlining the transferable skills that they believe they need to showcase. So if they're starting to pull skills from something they've done way, way back, then that might be more of an indication that they need to go one way versus if they've, this is a continuation of the skills or of the things that they've been doing in a very recent role. So, and I like to, you know, actually have a list, some of the transferable skills. And then that's actually a nice segue into interview preparation and some of the branding and LinkedIn and all those things. So those are some additional questions that I like to get to.
Fantastic. All of you had great contributions to this and also demonstrated that you're really grasping the difference between the three different types. I'm really happy to see that. And a lot of times when I'm working with clients, they have one of each, and they use the functional for some jobs that they're applying to, and they use the chronological for others. So having both, and even just the exercise of creating one, could prepare you for interview. So I think that's a great point too, Ariana.
I think you just hit the big one. I think that it's probably worth more than the resume itself because they can get, you know, they're more together in the interview. I think that's
they can tell a better story because that's the thing
totally.
I think a functional resume tells a better story, and so. It is a different story, but it definitely can tell a really good story. I also wanted to circle back around to what Chris said about the VIA. She didn't say VIA strengths, but she said we use a different one versus the Strength Finder. And I think with VIA, Values in Action Inventory, you could use that or the Strengths Finder in career exploration. I lean towards the VIA because it's about values, and aligning your values does help you feel more fulfilled. But I think the Strengths Finder especially lends itself to use with the resume. So you may want to do both, or if it's just a job search person, you may want to do the Strengths Finder. And to close up, I did want to just touch bases about future topics. And I did want to ask you guys, I think I'm going to want to change our January 9 to January 16. So double check to see if that works for you. But I think based on what Ariana just said, I think it would be good to go to job interview preparation next. What do you guys think about that?
Sounds good to me.
Okay.
Makes sense,
Vicki and Barry?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So then our next topic will be job interview preparation. and we'll have Ariana do some presentation on that, and then I'll coordinate with her and see what else we want to do. If you have any questions on job interview preparation, please send them to me, and we'll incorporate them, or if you have anything that you want to make sure we cover, please
let
us
know. And that's in January?
And that will be in January. Our December meeting is going to be our holiday meet and greet. So we will, in December, have some questions for you to share about yourselves. We'll have all of the coaches on the call. And I had thought about canceling it, but I think what I just need to do is get someone else to be the voice for me.
When is it? I may be able to do it.
Okay. It is, and we know how to get to those because we can go to Glacier Point Solutions and we can go to Associate Coach page and we can go to Coaching Training All Hands.
Oh, I have it. It's the 12th.
It looks like it's December 12th. Yeah, so Barry, maybe you could do
I just have to verify one thing. If I have something that day, I don't know. I'll look and see. If I'm available, I'll do it. If not, if I can't,
okay, then we'll find someone else. And then so the next career coaching practicum was January 9th, but I'm looking at moving it to the 16th because I'll be coming back from vacation. So I'll send an email out and confirm that you guys can do that, and if not, we'll keep it the same. But the next one will be holiday meet and greet, and then in January we'll do interview prep. And so I want to give some applause to you guys. You guys are amazing. I'm so excited that we're doing this and that you're all hanging in there with it. Hope you're learning great stuff. And let's all do some applause with our we'll use our 8 key. So we'll do... Okay, so I want to really applaud you guys. You're amazing. Thank you for your inputs. They were all wonderful. If you have any follow-up questions, email me. And then a reminder, December 6th, I go quiet and I can't speak for a few weeks. So,
that's a good reason to have somebody else help out on the 12th.
That's it, yeah. See, I won't be able to speak by the 12th. So, I'll be on the call and know that my energy and my spirit are coming across, but I won't be able to speak. So I'm going to have to put duct tape over my lips for I don't know how I'm going to not talk. But
we're sending you good prayers for a great recovery.
Thank you.
Yes, Donna.
Thanks. And everybody take care and we'll...
Whoa, last code.
And code.
I did it. I messed up. See, that's why I need Chris. Okay, the last code is V45. The last code is V45. And, yes, I'm going to remember to turn the recording off so we don't end up with an 8-hour call.
Is that Victor or Zebra?
Oh, Victor. Victor.
Okay.
He is in Victor. Thank you. Thanks so much, Chris, for taking care of me.
You're welcome.
Okay. Talk to
Thanks,
you
everyone.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, everyone, too. Bye.